On the other end, value, I see it as the two buckets: problem solving, I'm helping you do something, or B, I'm entertaining you and making and taking, not taking advantage of your time and bringing something that is in some way delighting you. And that's kind of the two buckets. If you want to be known for something and successful at something, you got to land in those two buckets where you're either solving people's problems through your content or you're entertaining people through your content.
Turn it up.
You're listening to the Marketing Millennials Podcast. I'm Emily Ferguson.
And I'm Daniel Murray. Get ready because we're taking you on a journey with today's marketing leaders and tomorrow's top stars.
Let's go!
No BS, just a fun, unfiltered industry conversation with the game changers behind some of the coolest companies from around the globe.
The one request we tell our guests:
stories or didn't happen.
A big welcome to our marketing fam.
Prepare to turn the up.
This episode is sponsored by Rebe, the marketing analytics platform that gives you answers instead of more data. If you're looking at boosting conversions and understanding where you're going wrong, then you have to check out a Rebe. No more wasting time on Google Analytics by looking through irrelevant data. Now you can get to the crux of your tracking and measuring efforts in just a few simple clicks. So how does it work? After you connect a Rebe to your or your client's site, everything is tracked and analyzed automatically. That means whenever you launch a new campaign, landing page, promotion, or piece of content, you don't need to worry about those annoying tracking codes. You'll immediately have all the data you need in a user-friendly dashboard. Also, Rebe lets you create conversion funnels in just a few seconds. And you get to see how your visitors behave through these flows on your site. They also have cool integrations with platforms like Facebook, HubSpot, MailChimp. So make sure you check them out. They have a 7-day free trial. And the Marketing Millennials listeners get 20% off all plans with the promo code TMM20. That's T as in the, M as in marketing, M as in millennials, 20. Or you can go to aribi.io/TMM. That's aribi.io/TMM. Or use a link in the show notes below to claim this amazing discount.
Hey, Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, man, appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this one. I wanted to just kick it off and let everybody know your background. How did you get into marketing and how did you land up where you are today?
Yeah, so marketing was never a thought for me, to be honest, like until probably 5-6 years ago. I think you and I have discussed this, but football was like my biggest passion kind of growing up. And it was like all I really thought about until my early 20s. And then I started traveling. So like mostly in Europe. And so like while I was traveling, I kind of got into this obsession of like storytelling. That was really the basis of it, was this obsession with storytelling based around like travel content and being able to create like compelling stories around travel content. So like that was like the kind of like seed for marketing. And then as like I kind of developed from there to like becoming a content creator and like touching that domain, referring to like kind of travel content and like diving into that, then I kind of started transitioning into marketing and kind of creating content for companies on the side, like more so freelance work. As I started that transition, that's when I like started really becoming obsessed with marketing. So that was probably like 6 years ago. And so I started a social agency here in Austin, Texas called Social First. Worked with about 25 to 30 brands within a 2-year span. What started as first, like I said, like a social agency where it was just creating like in-house content for local businesses here in Austin. And then it transitioned into working with DTC brands. And then as the agency scaled, started offering performance marketing and influencer marketing, conversion rate optimization, et cetera. And then we got to work with brands like Onnit, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but brands like Onnit. And then right after that, I kind of like, this was going into the whole pandemic, that I was just like, the agency life wasn't really for me. Like, that's not my, I don't like services. I like to create. And that's how I even got into marketing, right? It was like becoming a content creator, made me fall in love with storytelling. And then it scaled into everything else that stems underneath growth marketing. And so I ditched the agency life after quits after 2.5 years. And took all my learnings and was like, okay, I'm going to get into the startup game. I never really worked at a successful startup. I knew I wanted to basically create a ton of content and like use that content to connect with great people. Like that's my entire basis of why I love marketing. So I joined The Hustle in like just 2020. It's just like my years are all messed up because of the pandemic. I was just like, I don't even, just going through the, like, I just know it's 2021. Like that's about it. Can't believe today is November 1st, to be honest. So I joined The Hustle, joined their growth team, got to help grow The Hustle Daily, which is their newsletter with 1.5, 1.6 million subscribers, grow Trends, which is their paid subscription, and help grow my first million. And so I was there for roughly a year and a half during that, During that time, then I was basically like, okay, I'm gonna get back on this track of, I want to be a creator. I want to build things. I want to build things under my name, and I want to help people with their growth marketing efforts. So I during my last few months at The Hustle, I started really ramping up on Twitter, started building Marketing Examiner, which is my newsletter. And then basically the year mark, I left The Hustle to focus on building Marketing Examiner. And then I also joined the team at Gumroad as their like co-head of marketing position. Me and this other gentleman, Kyle Prinsloo, we both run Gumroad's marketing. And the reason I joined over there is because, so Gumroad, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but Gumroad has like this async work culture where there's like no meetings, no deadlines. You're kind of like left on your own, and you only work part-time as well. So like you could only work 15 to 20 hours a week. So for me, someone that's completely devoted to like building Marketing Examiner, this is like perfect where I don't have to be in meetings. I don't have to, you know, like I don't have to do the mundane things that come with working at a traditional startup. I get to be a part of something that I truly care about, which is helping creators grow and helping creators monetize their skills, et cetera, their mind. And then I also get to use that money to build Marketing Examiner. So now, yeah, working on building Marketing Examiner. Yesterday I announced that like I'm launching a paid newsletter. It was going to be called Garcia's Growth, but then I had a conversation with someone and we're like, that's kind of corny. So we're going to just go with like Growth Marketing Examiner, like instead, like Marketing Examiner will be the free version. And then Growth Marketing Examiner would just be, you know, like another tier, but focused on growth marketing. So that's how I got here now. It was really like this, funny enough, just picking up a Canon T5 Rebel Eye. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's just like a $300-$400 camera and taking in the sights of different places and kind of letting life teach me what I didn't know I liked. And that's how I got to marketing, man.
Yeah, I love that story. I love that most marketers I talk to like have the most unconventional paths. That's awesome to hear. I want to start in like, how do you like think of growth marketing? Like what is growth marketing to you? Like, cause everybody, I feel like there's so many definitions to like what growth marketing is.
Yeah. I understand the skills that lie within it, the frameworks that people, you know, the AAR framework, right? The 21 skills or technical skills that kind of go underneath the umbrella of marketing that create the T-shaped marketer. But overall, like if you look at it in the scope of things, it's really just connecting. And this is why I feel like the base of what I'm creating is growth marketing just is connecting great people to great brands and then watching that connection develop a great business. And if you can do that at scale, then that's growth marketing. Growth marketing is not hacks. Hacks are things that are very temporary, and true growth marketing is getting the right people in front of the right brands and the right businesses and creating that bond. So when I think of growth marketing, I just see it overall as this tool to make that happen.
Yeah, I love that. I want to go into like how you thought about growing like a newsletter and also how you thought about growing like Twitter. Like what was like the strategy behind it or did you go in just testing and then figuring it out?
For sure. So for Twitter specifically, it started off that I first wanted to grow on Twitter, right? Like I'm like, okay, I'm gonna first build a rented audience, meaning an audience where the algorithm determines distribution, it determines how much the content travels. But again, distribution is built in, right? If I want to start a newsletter tomorrow, I could write a newsletter every single day and send it every single day for 1,000 days, and it might not grow. Like it could just be sent to zero people, right? Because there's no distribution built in. But if I'm consistently putting content out into Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, et cetera, distribution is built in where the algorithm is going to reach other people. So my entire thing was first, I am going to build on Twitter, build out an audience there, and then leverage it to build a newsletter. So my first thing was, okay, I have basically zero people like as followers. I don't really have an audience on Twitter. And I was like, the way to hypergrow anything, right? Or a lot, most things is to do something a lot, like repeatedly do an effort. That's why people will do like, okay, like some, right? Like that if you're trying to lose X amount of weight, they'll do like 75 hard, right? It's like 75 days of consistently doing X to get X result. In my head, I thought the same thing, but for Twitter and creating an identity essentially around what I wanted to be known for, which was growth marketing. So I was like, I'm going to do 50 threads over 50 days on X topic, like only growth marketing, which like I'll now see some people like trying to do, you know, threads for X amount of days. And what they miss is the fact that like the threads are all about different topics. And so you don't really ever like get that anchor point that holds you within some identity that's like, I am this, or I talk about this, or this is what I'm good at. My experiences live here. And so when I started the 50 threads over 50 days, it was, I wanted to be known for growth marketing. That is my passion. That's what I want to then create a product around. It's essentially the newsletter, do a paid product around. So my entire thing was the way I could hyper grow my identity as X is by doing something with distribution built in over X amount of days. So that's how I approached Twitter specifically. And then, yeah, I guess the other missing thing there is if you really want to do that and for it to be effective, you actually have to find also what the if you're for me, it was Twitter and it was Twitter threads. But if you're doing this on real, like Instagram Reels or Instagram, sorry, or TikTok or YouTube, you have to find what the platform's growth content is. And that means the content that like an algorithm favors and out, like in the sense of that kind of content gets maximum engagement every like 9 out of 10 times. Right. And so meaning like Twitter, it's Twitter threads, like Instagram, it's Instagram Reels, YouTube, it's things with trending topics or sorry, trending sounds, trending music, et cetera. YouTube, it's long form content. And so for me, I picked the Twitter threads because I was now kind of like doing a double-edged sort of the consistency and then also utilizing a platform's growth content. And then as I saw that work, I knew that would then just be a bridge to an owned audience, meaning getting people on the email list, getting them to engage with me there and have a better relationship outside of just what I put out on Twitter and having better, I wouldn't say better content, but like more in detailed content, right? Like Twitter, 280 characters, you sometimes summarize things. You don't get to go in as much detail, but then if I get them into a newsletter, then I could go into like very deep specifics, try to scale things. So that was kind of my mindset and my idea behind it on really using Twitter as like a bridge to then email. I knew the money was going to be in the email. You know?
Yeah. The question I had too is like, I think a lot of people miss the part that you do very well is like, if you're going to do threads, you have to like have good content in there and like actionable content or like relevant content or insightful content. You can't just like, okay, I'm going to make 10 threads in this topic and like the copy is bad, the content is average. Like you have to have like your threads have like in detail stuff that like people can are like, oh shoot, I didn't know that. Or like, oh, I'm learning something about that. So how do you like go about thinking about like creating the content around it?
Again, like the main thing is it all stems from growth marketing and trying to form the identity around that. But the way I see content is like two buckets, really. The first one being problem solving. So anytime I'm creating content, I'm hoping it solves in some way someone's problem, right? Like if I talk about referral programs, it's because I'm hoping someone's trying to implement a referral program. They have implemented a referral program, it didn't work, or they're like, they're on the cusp of implementing one. And so therefore I could create a content that solves a problem. Therefore it's the shareability of that piece of content's much higher than if not. That's one way I see content as, or one bucket is problem solving. Because just like anybody goes on Google and searches some like for something, and in reality, they're searching for a problem. In Twitter, for example, on Twitter or Facebook or whatever platform we're talking about, many times they don't know they're facing the problem. But if you're addressing a certain market, a certain demographic of people, you're like unconsciously relaying there or getting in front of their problem and addressing it with your content. So problem solving is one. The second is entertainment, which I don't really do much of like on Twitter, but I guess a great example of an individual that does both, right? Like problem solving with cool business threads and whatnot is like Trung. He does a really good job of being entertaining as well through his memes, through like his personality, his humor. When you could get into both, like it, when you could, your content does either or, that's like then you creating value. So I think value is one of the most overused words, but it's never really broken down. Like what is value? And so overall, I see like if I can create value, it's because I'm in some way I'm delighting a consumer, I'm delighting a reader, right? If I put out a tweet and I make you laugh just for 10 seconds, in some way I provided value, right? I like delighted you in a way that for that 10 seconds, I created this dopamine hit and you're happy, right? On the other end, value, I see it as the two buckets: problem solving, I'm helping you do something, or B, I'm entertaining you and making and taking, not taking advantage of your time and bringing something that is in some way delighting you. And that's kind of the two buckets. If you want to be known for something and successful at something, you got to land in those two buckets where you're either solving people's problems through your content or you're entertaining people through your content.
Yeah, I love that. And also what I think people do badly, which I think you do very good well at, is like, if you're going to like talk about a topic, like, you know, the topic so well that it's easy and it's simple for everybody. Like some people I see put out there and it's like, it's so overcomplicated that like, yeah. if I was like a growth marketer, I probably would get like let's say a growth marketer is talking and they talk about growth marketing and they overcomplicate it. I'm like, okay, yeah. A growth marketer will understand that, but not a wide audience would understand.
Yeah. That. I think I wrote something today about that. It was like about using familiar words. For example, it was like Gary, I don't know how to say his last name, Provost. I'm terrible at pronouncing last names, but it was like, do you know what mandible is? Your dentist does. She uses that word every day. So if you're writing a story just for your dentist, use mandible. But if you're writing for everybody else, use the more familiar word, jaw. And it was like, that is a prime example of people try to use like the words that the buzzwords, like that they don't understand to just try to sound interesting or sound like they know what they're talking about. It's like the more simple you can write something, the better it is for you, is the better it is for your content. And the more credibility is going to be behind your content. And I think that that comes down to like people writing what they don't know as well. I think David Ogilvy is someone who said, he's like, he studies like a topic or he studies a campaign and or a product so much before he even puts any words on paper, because that's going to help unleash like his unconscious mind and his creativity. The more he knows about something, if he doesn't understand it and he's trying to write about it, then it's not going to come out in a way where like it feels real, it feels authentic, it feels natural to say those kinds of words. And so one thing I've totally noticed, because I've done this where I want to write about something. I'm not specifically saying like a Twitter thread, but like I've wanted to write about something, and I'll read like I'll scan like an article or two, and then I'll start trying to write. And a little bit into that writing, I'm like pausing. I'm like, what should I write here? What should I write here? And then I realized like, look, I just don't know, have a deep understanding of the topic yet. First, I should do an hour or 2 hours of like deep studying of this topic. And then that's when I should write, because now I'm going to have a better understanding. So now the words that are coming out should be coming out. They're more natural. The way that they're coming out is more natural. And so, yeah, I think that's like something that's super underrated. Like you actually knowing the topic and studying the topic is going to help you write so much better. I think one of his most famous headlines, David Ogilvy again, was like about the Rolls Royce. And he said he spent hours on hours just studying the Rolls Royce, everything about the Rolls Royce, reading about it. And then that helped him then develop what now is his most like famous headline for an ad and something that, yeah, again, think it's very underrated.
Yeah. I mean, also what I think is crazy is like, it's funny on Twitter sometimes and like other things is like for me, like I talk about marketing, but I super simplify it. But like my target audience is not like an expert marketer, like, yeah. But I always get called out by expert marketers because they think I'm making it too simple. But at the end of the day, like they just not understanding that I'm not writing for them. They just got like hooked into seeing my tweet or seeing my content. So like, it's just funny. Cause like, if you really just want to have an audience of just like expert marketers, just write like you're talking exactly to marketers. But if you want to get a wider audience, you have to be simple. Like you said right there.
I completely agree.
I'm interested in like, what are like some growth learnings that you learned from like working in an agency and also like working in a household? Like, what are some learnings that you learned from there from growing those two things?
So the agency, it was so like, they're all such different business models. When it came to local businesses, one thing I would say two learnings that still stick with me to this day are like running paid ads in you're working with a coffee shop and that coffee shop has just a lot of foot traffic, a lot of driving traffic in like a 3-mile radius. One of the very underrated things to do is just run constant ads from a 1 to 3 mile radius of the store, especially the 1 mile radius. I would actually put in more money into the 1 mile radius. That's something I learned for really local businesses. You could drive a ton of awareness around what you're doing. And it's like, there's not a lot of competition. There's not a lot of competition behind like local businesses running their ads. The other thing is, and this is, I'm in Austin, so this may be different for someone that's like in Wisconsin, right? Like I'm in Austin. It's a startup city. There's a lot of foot traffic. There's a lot of people. So these tips work for maybe a bigger city. Second is working with like local influencers, huge. Another thing for local businesses that's very underrated is working with the people that hold influence over what the city does. So like Austin has a lot of foodies. So it was always easy to find good foodies. They have a lot of event brands like 365 Things Austin, One Where What Austin. And these are brands that like, if you're hosting an event or if you're hosting different, not hosting an event, but like if you have these different things going on at your local business, then could be used really effective there. On it, when we were working with On It, Equinox was coming into play. So something that we did really well was like competition ads and like kind of like the A versus B kind of content worked really well because it was just hot while Equinox was coming in. I mean, there's so many, like I could go on and on about different growth hacks and, you know what I mean? Like growth strategies for the hustle did really well. I mean, with referral programs, which one thing that I think is like very underutilized, underrated is a proper referral program, which I'm sure like you're familiar with like Sparkloop, which is probably the best way for anybody right now to start a referral program. But yeah, man, I mean, there's so many growth strategies. That's something I could talk about for like 45 minutes is different growth strategies with a whiteboard behind me. You know what I mean? Like I could go on days for.
I would love to know, like, how do you start learning growth marketing? Like, I know, but one is like your newsletter, obviously, but.
No, for sure. I think you got to start by actually learning on a product or trying to grow something. And that product could be digital. It could be by even like you could go in today and create a free Gumroad product, right? Like a something that you don't even have to charge money for. And you could try to figure out, okay, how am I going to get 250 people to sign up for this? Through that, you could test various things. Okay, what happens if for the next week I post 5 times on TikTok, or I collab with this creator, or I write a guest post, or a guest newsletter, or I get on X podcast. And there's so many different ways to growth hack like that. Like I just think that if you are getting started, try to build something or generate results doing something. Because if not, then all your growth hacks are theories, right? You could be like, oh yeah, if I did run Facebook ad and I had a referral program, then yeah, I'm sure I would get, you know, I would generate one customer and that customer would then generate 3. It's not the reality of it. So, I mean, when I was first getting my newsletter up and running, I was testing, I think like 3 different variations of my referral program until I found the one that really hit. So the best way to get started is to try to, and this is something I think Sahil from Gumroad talks about, is like placing small bets. So like trying to grow little things and then as you try to grow those little things, figure out the things that are really helping it scale and then test from there. I think growth hacking really comes down to just a ton of testing, right? Like you could do one week test that will give you a ton of answers. And then especially at the beginning, if you're focusing on getting even your first 100 customers, it's like focusing on qualitative data and talking to customers, getting a ton of customer feedback, then using that to scale things. And then your quantitative data is going to help you then scale to even further past that. So my biggest thing was to try to start building something free. And if you do something on Gumroad, Substack, whatever, you can start growth hacking tomorrow and then use all the things that you're learning from, like, say, Julian Shapiro or me, or from Nick Sharma or yourself, Daniel, like all these different hacks, then use it to actually try to get from A to B. Try to use it to go from 0 to 1, then 1 to 10.
Right? Yeah, so I love that. I love that, because I think that's the underrated piece right there. It's like the side hustle of building something or something. For me, because like even with your Twitter threads, I bet like you had a theory that like Twitter threads work because you saw it, but you didn't. You could, and you probably could tell someone that Twitter thread, but you couldn't like actually said it works until you put them into use.
Exactly. Yeah.
So like even for me, like I could tell some, like before, like I saw like what, how to grow on social media, but like I never did it myself. Yeah. But until now that I've done it myself, like I could definitely like tell people how to do it. Like it's not, but it took me time to actually like try a bunch of things before and failed upon a bunch of things
for
before
sure.
I had that work.
That's exactly what happened to me. It was like, before I started really doing those 50 threads over 50 days, I had just like posted a few pieces of content on Twitter. Like nothing got a ton of engagement. I think I wrote a thread on just like Nike's logo, how I think Nike paid like $27 for their logo. And I wrote like just a story about that. And it popped off. It got like, at the time, I probably like 100 followers, 200 followers, and it got like 500 or 600 likes. I was like, ah, this is the platform's growth content. Like this works. And I knew it's, and I gained like a ton of followers that day, like a few hundred. I was like, oh shit, like this is awesome. Right. And then that was kind of the testing ground for, okay, now if I scale this and I do 50 over 50 days, where am I going to get to? Right. And it started slower, but what I did notice was every thread performed well. Like every thread got a few hundred likes. And then over time it got, you know, into consistently getting to thousands of likes. But yeah, it's just you have to test it. Like if not, everything's theory, and you can't drive results based off theory as much as we'd all hope we could. You can't.
Yeah, and I like that you've done it, like you've replicated, like your growth strategies have been replicated on multiple platforms too. But it's all like, also like one thing that you're saying very well is like you have to like deeply figure out the platform before you like start doing this stuff. Like you can't just like say, okay, I'm going to grow on Twitter tomorrow and then not spend any time discovering how like Twitter works. Like
Twitter's a machine. If you could get it to work for you, then dude, like it's the potential is endless. Especially if you understand topics and like how kind of Twitter has its own built-in SEO. So then you could kind of optimize your threads too. So if I'm trying to trend in marketing, by using marketing in my first tweet, I could get my whole, and this is if someone doesn't even have really an audience, and I could get my whole thread to then trend under marketing topic. And that's almost like a Google search's first page by getting into there. It's like, but the only difference is every day it's different. It's every different content trending. So if you can consistently get there, you could get in front of thousands of new people every single day just by using keywords. So that's like an easy growth hack right there for people that are trying to grow on Twitter. Is like use the proper keywords relevant to the topic that you're trying to be known for or discuss, and start trending and learn and like study what people are doing in those topics that gets their content trending. And then you could kind of reverse engineer that and figure out how to create your own content that then starts trending in those topics. And then another kind of like little growth hack is if you could get like a group of friends at all, like say you have 1,000 followers and you have 5 other friends in that realm of, I don't know, you like if it's someone that talks about cannabis and they have 5 other friends that have kind of talk about cannabis and like investing in cannabis, et cetera, then you can share each other's content, right? Like continuously retweet each other's content and help each other's content get trending in X topics. So like those are little growth hacks. But yeah, I mean, it really comes down to you have to actually be, it's social media. You're supposed to actually be social. You're just taking what you would do in real life and do it in this kind of digital sphere, right? And so I completely agree with you. You got to understand a platform before you could try to grow on a platform. That's why I'm big on when you're trying to grow like an audience, right? And I'm all for Gary Vee. I love Gary Vee, but like, I don't like when people try to be like master 5 platforms at once, like master 1 platform.
Get really good at I agree one with platform. That. I yeah. agree with that. The only reason Gary and people don't get the only reason why Gary Vee can be great at multiple platforms because he has a a team of people that exactly. are doing this. Like,
exactly.
If you're one person trying to do Gary Vee, you're gonna just be average at every single platform.
Yeah.
100%. That's like you the kind of what you did with Twitter. Like, you didn't start email until, I mean, you knew email from the hustle, but you didn't really start, like, you started email a little bit while you're growing yeah. your Twitter audience. Like, I started like LinkedIn, and then I realized, okay, I understand LinkedIn. I can,
yeah,
I don't have to put as much effort anymore at LinkedIn. I can start doing Twitter. That's the only time I started moving to Twitter. I didn't like try to do both, because I would have failed horribly yeah. if I did both at the same time.
I'm on the same boat as you there. Like, it's the next platform I'm going to tackle is TikTok. And it's like, but I'm first now like spending time on TikTok, trying to figure out what marketers and business people are doing to grow. Like one person that crushed it on TikTok is, I think it's like a business podcast, and she hadn't grown an audience elsewhere. Like I think she has like a smaller kind of audience on other platforms, but on TikTok, she started crushing it, like absolutely crushing it. It's something in the hundred thousands. And so she launched her podcast, which is the one I'm blanking on the name, but the day she launched it, it was up number one on the charts for like a whole week. And it was just all based off her TikTok audience, which is pretty insane. And it was, the reason I know it was off TikTok is because I was reading like the reviews on it, on her podcast. And it was like 99% of them were all, I found you on TikTok. Now I'm here on your podcast. And I was like, wow, this is pretty insane. And I've been talking to a few other marketers who actually had a ton of success using TikTok to grow their newsletters, yeah. et cetera.
I mean, that's crazy. Cause I mean, I've discovered podcasts off of TikTok. Like I saw, like, you know, Jason Calacanis, whatever.
Yeah.
And his the All In podcast. And then I saw even all of the Barstool podcasts, which they do it really well. I've discovered yeah. all of the Barstool podcasts off of like TikTok. I didn't hear it from like going on podcasts and searching for a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're good at video and have a good video person and know how to get relevant clips in there, you can grow quickly yeah. on TikTok with that.
It's crazy because like TikTok it's really like, there's a difference between making a video and making a TikTok. It's like, I think there's like this girl, Social Savannah, I believe was her
name. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where she's like, she's the killer at this, where she understands how to really make trending TikTok ads, clips, et cetera. Because like when I was at The Hustle, we brought on the team Smart Nonsense, which is like growing or blowing up on Twitter now, which I'm sure you've seen a lot of their clips. They do the clips for, well, one, My First Million, and then they also do them for the All In Pod with Jason. And I think they do some clips now for like Naval and whatnot. And it's funny because they're like such well put together clips. I mean, like the 3D animation, et cetera, like motion graphics, killer, but it doesn't perform well on TikTok.
No.
And then on the other hand, if you go look at, let's say Morning Brew, and you look at, I don't know if you've ever watched any of Morning Brew's content on TikTok specifically.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They crush. Get sometimes millions of views, and it's because it's actually how people consume that or content on that platform. It's like more of the art, like the art of legitimately, like a TikTok, right? It's very different. It's raw, it's authentic, it's shot on your iPhone. It doesn't need to be fancy, it doesn't need to have any glamour motion graphics. It just needs to be entertaining. And then I think the best, there's this girl Vigalia who she's like one of Gumroad's top creators. I mean, she's crushed it, and the way she discusses her content is, it needs to be edutainment. So like a mix of education and entertainment mixed with like a fast pace, mixed with fast pace to like basically not get the attention to dwindle off. And her as well, like she blew up because of TikTok. So I just see, like, I know we're rambling on TikTok, but like ton of potential there. Usually people or like businesses fail to adopt to that fast. And like, especially, you know, you'll hear, oh my God, this is like Facebook advertising on Facebook in 2003 and 2005 or whatever. Like, I want to have that moment, right? Like, I want to be like, put my marketing dollars on a platform, and it's just like, holy shit, like, this is not real kind of thing. So I'm curious to explore TikTok more.
Yeah. I mean, the way you're thinking about it is the right way to think about it. Like, even if you're not like ready to be on a platform, like I talked to the VP of marketing at Tinder, and she tells me, like, even if I'm not, we're like not on platforms, I'm always like going to like on platforms and using the platform just to know like why it works. Even if you don't put one piece of content on TikTok, just go on TikTok to know why TikTok is working, why people are spending time on there. And then you can reverse engineer like people's attention from that.
Yeah, 100%.
Like even like, I mean, does she just, she said this, like, I don't know, but she said like OnlyFans, for example, like, why are people on OnlyFans? She's like, I'm on there to look at why people are on OnlyFans. Like, I'm not on there to like be on OnlyFans. I'm on there to like know why people are on OnlyFans.
For sure. Which makes sense. And it's crazy because like, you'll notice too, one thing I've noticed about, for example, just like being on platforms, for example, Instagram, I've noticed is the mother of all platforms, meaning all kind of content lives on Instagram and it all performs well. So you'll get TikTok clips making it on there. You'll get Twitter threads even getting screenshot and put it on there. You'll get like screenshots of tweets getting put on Instagram. You'll get whatever, like all sorts of content, like long form content, right? So you're getting basically getting YouTube content put on Instagram. But all the other platforms, they have their own native content. Yeah, it's very good to understand the platform, the content that gets shared on the platform, the best performing content on certain platforms, so that what you say, you just reverse engineer what works and figure out how to spin it so that it works for you.
I mean, the Instagram part is a good play because you'll see, like, you could tell that, like, because it does work if you know how to fix it. Like, I could take, if you take your best performing thread and make it a TikTok and for like that's designed for TikTok or designed for LinkedIn or designed for Reddit, you can make it go off. Like, you just have to design it for the platform because you know that it had 4,000 people like it on one platform. So you could take it and go to move to another platform.
That's exactly what I like preach all the time, or preach is the wrong word, but like Twitter's my testing grounds. It's where I do all my testing. And then if it performs well on Twitter, because like you're getting like real world or just like it's hyper speed, you're getting feedback at hyper speed, take that knowledge and then go scale that piece of content, right? Like if one of my best performing tweets is about writing like an Amazonian and like copywriting tips for that, I could scale that and that would probably crush on TikTok, right? Like if I'm talking about nine copywriting tips to write like an Amazonian, or then I create it into a YouTube video that's 7+ minutes, et cetera. But just by using Twitter as the testing ground, you could then scale into whatever platforms. And I think that's, once you get really good at one platform, then you can kind of do that too. Is like you could just take everything that performed really well on one platform and alter it so it fits what another platform's needs. But you're just taking very high performing content, and then now
I mean that's how I'm sustaining LinkedIn right now. I'm taking my highest performing Twitter content and just putting it on LinkedIn. That's how I'm sustaining it. Like if I didn't have, like sometimes I don't like want to create content for the platform. So I'm like, okay, I'll just take my best performing content that I know will work on LinkedIn and put it up there. I like to ask everybody in the podcast, like, what are you seeing that most, and I'll specify it for growth marketers, what are most growth marketers doing wrong today, or the marketers in general doing wrong today?
This is a buzzword right now. Not enough companies are acting as media companies is my biggest thing. I think more companies need to act as media companies or develop a media arm. I think the best company doing it, or one of the best companies doing it right now, is MicroAcquire, which I'm sure you're familiar with MicroAcquire, but they just launched their own media platform or media like company bootstrappers or media arm, essentially, bootstrappers. Which is everything that is MicroAcquire, right? It's like this, it's a newsletter and blog specifically focused around just bootstrapping companies. And then on top of that, he has MicroAcquire, which is where you go to purchase bootstrapped companies and people selling their bootstrapped companies. So it's like this perfect bridge to get people from bootstrappers and become fans of bootstrappers to then buy or sell their companies on MicroAcquire. Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing I see the mistake is not creating content arms, and then you solely relying on your acquisition needs to come from like paid media and different paid media avenues. When if you're creating your content arm, then you can create this over time. It definitely takes time, but if you create a content strong content arm, then you're going to be building something that's acquiring customers continuously as you scale. The way I see things run is like, it goes like content to culture, culture to commerce. So if you could nail those three, where you're creating content that impacts, let's say, your domain's culture and is creating a brand within that your domain's culture, then you'll be able to scale that to, or sorry, you'll transition from there to commerce. And if you could, and then over time, that's just like this infinite feedback loop. I think we've seen it now with F1. We've seen it now with Squid Games. It's really just this hierarchy of like creating really good content, then it impacts culture, and then culture impacts commerce. And you could do that, but like Wistia is doing that right now with B2B. They just created like an animated series on like B2B marketing or something like that along those lines. And they're probably one of the best ones of creating content that then shifts the culture within their domain and then gets people to use and implement Wistia. So yeah, the biggest problem or things that growth marketers or companies, whatever that is not doing is like developing their own media arms and understanding the affinity that comes with developing a media arm. You could pay for millions of impressions, right? And get in front of millions of people, but doesn't mean you're actually making an impression. It's really just that. It's one quick impression. But if you can create content that people are landing on and then choosing to interact with, engage with, now you're building affinity. And affinity is the superpower that if you can create affinity, then you can have a fan for life. That's why I think like one of the greatest examples is Hot Ones. Have you watched that show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hot Ones. Like they did, I think it was like $7 million in revenue in 2019 or 2020. And it all came from selling hot sauce. That's the back end of creating a really good show, creating really good content. Everybody wanted to go through like, see if I could take this hot sauce. They wanted to know, get the whole sample pack so they could do Hot Ones at home, right? It's the back end of really good content. I think another company doing it well is like Old Spice with, I think their series like Cold as Balls with Kevin Hart. Like that's selling, it's increasing Old Spice's sales and revenue because of the content that they're on the back end of. So yeah, the biggest thing is creating a media arm, a content machine behind your company. And that's like the number one thing I plan on doing is like my entire, I guess I'll back it up with what I'm doing, which is building Marketing Examine has 13K subs right now, launching a paid newsletter to then just be able to fund other free pieces of content. So like launching a podcast, creating a video series, having a really strong blog. It's all just so I could extend my media arm. That's why I'm launching a paid product, so I could just extend that and reach even more people and then eventually funnel them to different products as well. But yeah, it's content, culture, commerce.
I love that. Yeah, I totally agree. That's one of the best like answers. Yeah, I think like it's so in people's faces, but they just people aren't like investing in it because it's all this like going back to like people taking money and being tied to a revenue number, and then they can't do it because they're spending money without quick results. And,
yeah.
But I wouldn't leave this last minute for you to say where people can find you, like where can they find Marketing Examine, like where can they follow you, anything you want to talk about.
By the time this airs, my product will be out, Growth Marketing Examined, which will be, you'll be able to get that just via through Twitter or if you're signed up for my newsletter, Marketing Examined. Also, I'm launching it via, wanted to put my own like words to practice. So I'm launching it via Gumroad, kind of inspired by Sahil and like his most recent book, The Minimalist Entrepreneur. I don't want to like promo my product, but what it is I'm going to take every, like my members' growth marketing questions. So say you have a question about growth loops, how to implement it in your B2B SaaS company. I'm going to take your questions. The community will upvote which questions they want answered based on which questions they get upvoted. I'll write a deep dive case study with a strategy that you could implement tomorrow on that. If that's something that interests you, would love to have you there. But other than that, I would love to chat on Twitter, my newsletter. So Twitter, it's AlexGarcia_ATX. And then Marketing Examined. My newsletter is www.marketingexamined.co. My Instagram, I don't really talk about marketing on my Instagram, but it exists. It's the same thing.
You don't have to be, like we just talked about, you don't have to be on every channel. And every channel doesn't have to be a marketing channel for you. So
if you like to see my dog, then
if you want to see my personal life, check out my Twitter.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much, man.
This has been awesome and good to finally connect and face to face.
Likewise, man. I really appreciate it. I'm glad also that you're feeling better. So, but yeah, great.
Yeah, you too.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Bye.